Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Exactly how was your weekend? Because the NCAA tournament's weekend was incredible. We covered it all. 16 seed UMBC laying the wood to the tournament's number one overall seed, Virginia. Nevada running down both Texas and Cincinnati and Loyola Chicago. And their 98-year-old international superstar, Sister Jean. We had three of the Sweet 16 coaches on today to talk about surviving and advancing. Porter Moser at Loyola Chicago, Eric Musselman, the head coach of Nevada, and Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari. Busy, busy day and a busy Daily Jungle. It all gets started right now. Starting with the tournament. Let me ask you this. Exactly how was your weekend? Because the NCAA tournament's weekend was amazing. Maybe the best weekend ever. The NCAA tournament really is that guy who rolls into the office raving about all the awesome things that he did since you last saw him on Friday. And he'd be right, because that weekend was that good. That was one of the best weekends ever. I mean, how crazy was that weekend? Buffalo smashing Arizona feels like that happened last year, but it was Thursday. How long ago does that feel? I mean, here's a mini recap from the weekend. The defending champs, North Carolina, cracked by 21 by Texas A&M. Florida State coming back to knock out a one seed in Xavier. Clemson smashing Auburn by 31. Texas Tech beating Florida in a nail biter. Syracuse barely getting into the tournament, but then knocking out Michigan State. And Michigan's Jordan Poole running a dagger through Houston's heart.
Livers gets the basketball, looking, throws it into Rockmont at midcourt. 2 seconds, Rockmont off the pool, three for the win. He got it! Jordan Poole, the freshman, hits it at the buzzer, and Michigan is off to the Sweet 16. 64-63 is your final.
Thanks to Westwood One and a freshman with that dagger. And no sooner than he did it, Academy Award winner Jordan Peele tweeted, "I want to thank everyone for the congratulatory messages. When you practice your jump shot as much as I have, you just hope one day it'll pay off." End quote. Oh, and the jungle karma. How about the karma over the weekend? The karma was so strong. So strong. Texas Tech, Florida State, Nevada, Loyola, to name just a few. And let me take a moment to talk about Loyola. How badass is this crew? First trip to the tournament in 3 decades, and they beat Miami on a last-second shot. And it's a great story. But you know how this goes. A great moment. But what normally happens? They crash back to earth in the next round. They go up against Tennessee. They get hammered in the next round. You had to expect it. Wrong. You know what's better than one buzzer-beater upset? 2 buzzer-beater upsets. I give you Clayton Custer and some of the incredible bounces along the rim.
Towns will inbound at midcourt just to the left of us. Holds the basketball, gets it into Custer in the backcourt. Here he comes across the timeline, 8 seconds. Custer dribbling right. Custer stops, fires a 15-footer, bounces, and it goes! It went in! 3.6 seconds left. Schofield to inbound, into Bone, on the run, into the front court. Top of the key, 3 at the buzzer. No! And Loyola wins! The Ramblers win it!
Another amazing end for the Ramblers. And bucket to Custer, but the assist has to go to Sister Jean, the 98-year-old nun. Is just as legendary, if not more legendary, than the Rambler players themselves. And she knows it. She was asked about what it was like to become a national sensation. And her response was, and I quote, "Really? If I can correct you, international," end quote. Yes, Sister Jean was straight fire. If I can correct you, international. I mean, I haven't heard anything that good since Adam Sandler corrected me on how much money he makes per movie. Then you've got UMBC. In terms of UMBC shocking the world Friday night and becoming the first 16 to ever beat a one. Listen, I said going into the week, and I have been saying it for quite some time, just because it had never happened before did not mean that it wouldn't happen, because it would. A 16 was definitely going to get a one. That was not a question of if, but rather a matter of when. I call that. Except when I call that, I didn't mean this year. And I didn't mean that game. But the Retrievers shocked the world with one of the biggest upsets of all time and reminded everybody why the NCAA tournament might be the greatest event in all of sports. UMBC was so amazing that Nevada, which would be the story of any other Sweet 16, may actually be getting overlooked. Overlooked after coming back from down 14 against Texas and then chasing that with one of the most amazing comebacks in tournament history, stabbing Cincinnati in the heart after being 22 down. Down 22 with just over 11 minutes to go. Listen, I don't hot take. I don't spew molten lava to get clicks or to get people to look at me. And I sure as hell don't play favorites, ever. My favorite team is, and always has been, team content. My favorite athlete is anybody who gives me anything to talk about, good or bad. And if I'm being real, this is a big Mick Cronin house. But I have to say this. I go as far back with Eric Musselman as probably anybody in my professional career. Muss and I did not grow up together, but effectively, we came up together. He was one of the first guys that I ever interviewed when I got my first radio break in Santa Barbara back in the 80s. I first spoke to Muss when he was a 23-year-old GM slash coach of the Rapid City Throwers in the CBA. So I've known Eric Musselman 3 decades. You've heard him on this show over the years dozens of times. And I can say in all sincerity, I'm not sure I've ever met a guy this fierce, this driven, this competitive, who's got that kind of discipline and work ethic. So I couldn't be happier for this dude or the Wolfpack family for pulling out what they did this weekend. More on that a little bit later on and a conversation with Eric Musselman. And let me take one more moment. One moment right now to say something on behalf of everybody else in the world. Nobody. I mean, nobody cares about your bracket. Nobody cares that you had Virginia beating Michigan State in the title game, or that all four of your Final Four teams are already out, or that you were thinking about picking Loyola to advance to the Sweet 16, but at the last second, you erased it. You weren't. Stop saying it. And if you start a single sentence with, "But in my other bracket," you're just looking to get clowned and to have people hate you. Nobody ever cares about anybody's bracket other than their own, but especially this year because everybody's bracket has already been torched. And if you're complaining about your bracket after what you saw over the past 4 days, then that's a you problem and not an us problem. Because if you can't step back and say, "Damn, that was an amazing weekend. That might have been the best weekend," because you're too busy whining about your bracket, then forget about the office pool you've already lost at life. Porter Moser is my guest. Porter, good to have you back. How you feeling? How are things?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me. The jungle was great to me. We talked last week. So thanks for having me on.
No, you got it. Thanks for doing it again. I really appreciate it. On Thursday, you and the program made history when Dante Ingram hit that game-winning three. Why don't we start right there, Porter? What's going through your head? What emotions are you feeling when that shot goes down?
You know, it's just it's surreal. As a coach, you can't get too high or too low. So, like, I had an assistant coach that it seemed like he was already standing on the scorer's table facing our fans. He ran so much out. But as a head coach, you know, your mind was thinking, was there there's a clock? Are they putting more time on the clock? Do you get back and all that? But it was just surreal to see a Chicago kid, Dante Ingram from Simeon High School, hit it for Loyola Chicago, and when it's been down so much here. We had one Illinois kid, I think we talked last week, on the roster at Loyola Chicago when I got here. And they hadn't had a Chicago Public League kid for 12 years. And to have a Chicago kid hit that, I was just so happy for Dante, you know, when I just kind of saw him hit it. And it was really a cool moment for our program.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing in that regard that we talked about that last week, but you're a Chicagoland guy. You went to Loyola. You knew you wanted to keep that local talent at home, and you wanted guys who had won in high school believing that would lead to success. So what's it mean to see that vision become a reality over the course of the season?
You know, it is awesome. I mean, from being a Chicago area guy growing up, I'm a diehard Chicago sports fan. You know, Cubs, Bulls, Blackhawks, Bears, and this is such a prideful sports town. And people told me when I got this job, you know, it's a pro sports town. But you know what it is? It's a prideful blue-collar sports town. They, whether it's whatever sport it is, if they love how tough you are and how you play, they get behind you. And this city has embraced us like none other. It's been unbelievable, the city of Chicago, how they've embraced our team. And that means so much to me from being here. it means so much for the vision of Loyola University. I mean, to get Loyola's name out there and so many things talked about, our 63 national championship team talked about with what they meant with the game of change and cultural integration. And it's just really cool for our university and the city.
There's no doubt. Clones, let me talk to you about a product that you have to check out. MyPillow. Clones, you know I am all about Nap Nation, and when it comes to sleep, how can you ever expect to get a good night of sleep if you don't have the right pillow? After listening to your terrible phone calls, more sleep may do all of you some good. No more tossing and turning or waking up in the middle of the night. MyPillow uses a patented technology that morphs perfectly to the type of sleeper that you are. You create the pillow that's right for you on the website. It's amazing. And of course, it's all manufactured right here in the United States. Each MyPillow comes with a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and the best part is you get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you've got nothing to lose. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-985-3307 and use the promo code JUNGLE to take advantage of my special 4-pack deal. Buy two premium MyPillows and get two go-anywhere pillows for free. So again, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-985-3307 and use the promo code JUNGLE to take advantage of my special 4-pack deal. That's MyPillow. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Porter Moser joining us, and especially in that town, because it's always been said, and I think a lot of towns would try and say this about themselves, but the fact is, if you're a winner in that town, there's almost no better place to be a winner than in Chicago. And when you talk about the attention the program's getting, then again, you have Sister Jean. Over the last few days, the world has met and fallen in love with Sister Jean. What do you remember about the first time you met her, and what has she meant to you and to that team?
Well, I actually, before I met her personally, I got a file folder. I literally, when I got in my office for the first time, there was a file sitting there, and I opened it up, and it was an evaluation of all the players I inherited. Like, John needs to get quicker. This guy, just very general statements, but it was hilarious. And then I met her, and she just got so much energy, and I just connect with people with energy and positivity and enthusiasm. The Sister Jean that you see on TV right now in the wheelchair is not her. She just had an accident. Before that accident, she's running around on campus with her Nikes in the snow, ice, whatever it is, completely self-sufficient, high energy. And so that's not the Sister Jean that we know in the wheelchair. That's just an accident. She's got a ton of energy, and she means a ton to our university.
Man, and so sharp. So sharp.
Yeah.
Porter Moser joining us. All right, so you go ahead and move ahead to Saturday. What's going through your mind as you watch Clayton Custer's shot go up? It's bouncing around on the rim, and then it finally falls through. Did you know it was good all the way, or did that first bounce on the rim make you think maybe it wasn't meant to be?
You know, I got to be honest, Jim. Like when it hit, any time a coach sees a shot go up and it hits the rim and goes up, you're like, "Damn!" You know, because most of the time when it hits the rim and bounces up, they barely go in. You know, we wanted the ball in Clayton's hand, and you know, they were trapping ball screens. We kind of bought a ball screen up and kind of dropped it really quick. And he's so good at getting a little separation on that little pull up, and he's made that shot so many times. And when he shot it and it went up, I was just like, "Oh!" And then it went down. You know, your mind immediately goes to get back on transition. Should I call a timeout? Running back is, you know, it's just what you do as a head coach. Your mind goes to the next play, but a little divine intervention, I'll take any time.
Porter Moser joining us, head coach of Loyola Chicago. You know, you're not the biggest team. We know this, but you out-rebounded Tennessee, who's got some serious size, 27-24. So what's that tell you about the way your guys are playing right now?
Well, like you said, we're not the biggest or the most athletic, but, you know, working for Coach Majerus for so many years, you know, if you play teams that are more athletic than you, how do you take their athleticism away? One, transition, get your butt back, make a wall. Two, block out, get in their legs. You know, and you know, you don't have to be the biggest dog in this fight. And we had three or four fouls on blocking out, and I was, if you saw me, I was applauding our guys.
Sure.
Like, I'll take that foul. You just keep blocking out. And, you know, not that I agree with the fouls. I don't know if they were fouls, but I'd rather have us go make the effort to block out. And, I think that's – and the other way to take it is be connected on defense. You know, great shell principles, be connected, shrink the floor. And, I think that's something that we did in these games.
Loyola Chicago on to the Sweet 16. You know, I go back to Sister Jean for 1 minute. She was so funny when somebody said, "How does it feel to be a national star?" And she quickly said, "International star." I mean, it's awesome. And then you've got – President Obama hyping the team, Chance the Rapper tweeting about your players. I know you had a plan when you took over there. We talked about it the last time you came on. But did that plan include the team chaplain becoming an international star and rap icons talking up Rambler basketball?
The Sister Jean phenomenon is you can't even visual, you can't even picture this. We've known all along how cool it is, but it's crazy. Anytime anybody meets her here, you fall in love with her. So it's just natural that when the country sees her, they do the same thing. And you know, in terms of the other part, you visualize getting your program to where you want it in the locker room, the talent level, the culture, the kind of guys. And then this is just a byproduct of that, you know, once you start winning. And you just don't start off, I said, you know, I want to get this thing to the point where celebrities are tweeting at us. It's just so cool because Chicago is this kind of city. And I think it resonates, and people relate with our team. We're you know, hard-nosed blue-collar kids, and it's been a really fun journey.
The thing is, I want to talk about the journey in 1 second before you go, but every coach wants their culture to take. Clearly, your culture is taking when you've got guys talking about the culture and what you want from them. But when you're dealing with a program that needs to be turned around, one of the challenges is not just dealing with the losses, but also the challenge that comes with winning and people telling you how awesome you are, how great you are. You've got 7 guys on your team that won state championships. You've won a conference title, so you're used to success. But how do you go about dealing with the kind of success and hype that comes with reaching the Sweet 16?
You know, those are great points and concerns, and we've been talking about it. And you know, if you want culture, you've got to recruit it and hire it. You know, and you know, so we've had those kind of kids on the way in. You know, state championship kind of guys. And one thing I've been asked this ton of times in the last month, you know, how are they handling all this? Is so much hype, you know, and are they handling all right? And the answer is I want them to enjoy this journey. I want them. I don't want to harness this. This is a great time in their lives. And I'm able to do that because the group has been really mature on when it's time to lock in, time to focus. These guys have been locked in. I mean, every film session, every practice, they've kind of had a mantra to, like, put that one in the bank, next one. So these guys are – we said it going into this tournament. We just didn't want to be that team that was just grateful to be in here. These guys were locked in after we won the Missouri Valley tournament. There was a ton of hype, and people were asking, like, how are you going to handle this? These guys are – it's going crazy getting in the tournament. And the guys were locked in. They were full gas pedal ahead, you know, about getting more, doing more. And that's the way these guys are right now. I mean, I can guarantee you our film session and practice this afternoon will be locked in because of the kind of guys they are.
Hey, listen, from where I'm sitting, it doesn't seem like there's any surprise whatsoever. They don't seem remotely surprised that they're going to the Sweet 16. I mean, it seems like they knew or they expected it. Listen, I know you don't want to make it about you, but let me make it about you for a minute. When we spoke earlier this month, we talked about the journey. We talked about the time that you put in as a head coach and an assistant and all the grinding and battling that went into it. So what's it like to be in the moment right now? How does it feel for you?
You know, I feel blessed. You know, some guys don't get a second chance. Some guys, you know, my faith, my family, my assistant coaches, the people you surround yourself with, I've been blessed. I'm surrounded by a great support group that's helped it. And you know what? You know, everybody in life's going to have adversity, and how you handle that is what's going to define you. And I just didn't want my setback to define me. And I've been blessed to go with Coach Majerus at St. Louis. Been blessed that Loyola University gave me this opportunity, my hometown. And you just got to stay positive with yourself and surround yourself with great people. And I've been blessed to do both.
All right, so very clearly, you're not just happy to be there. I know your guys aren't either. Next challenge is Nevada. When you look at Nevada, the early look at Nevada, what concerns you the most about the Wolfpack?
They're resilient. I mean, they're absolutely resilient. Toughness, matchup problems. They're like 6'7" all the way across the board, point guard to center. They switch everything. They're just resilient. To go through the 2 games they went through, getting down, they don't play a lot of guys, so they're obviously really tough mentally and physically, but they can do a lot of things. I mean, the Martin twins are phenomenal. Kendall Stevens, I mean, think about the shooter he is. He broke Jimmer Fredette's shooting record in the Mountain West. And, you know, Jordan Caroline, I mean, they can really score, really push the tempo, and then they cause you mismatch problems because they're so versatile on defense.
You know, it's well stated. I would say one more thing about them. It seems any coach wants the team to take on his personality. I've known Eric Musselman a long time, Porter. The guy, I mean, he's so competitive and he's so tough. The guy's fierce. That team, to me, personifies or embodies that coach and his value system. When you look at the way they play, do they remind you of him?
100%. I mean, I don't know him very well. I know of him. But I know how competitive and tough he is, and I know how competitive he is. And their kids are that way. They're competitive. They're tough. They're resilient. Heck, he's so competitive, he didn't want to get his shirt ruined last night in the locker room.
Right. Clones, it is tournament time, so give me a minute so I can chat with you about my bookie. Hey, listen up, clones. If you already busted your bracket, there is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you have not signed up yet, it is not too late. Lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie.ag. Here's why you want to do this. For instance, are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. This is a service that has been good to countless thousands. This is why you want to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after tip-off. Join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use the promo code ROME to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. Play, win, and get paid. MyBookie.ag. Check that out now. That's MyBookie. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Talk some Nevada basketball right now. Now, if the weekend had only been Loyola and everything else was chalk, it still would have been an amazing weekend. But it was so much more than that, thanks to Nevada and, as we mentioned, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Let's talk Nevada for a minute. Let's talk Friday night. The Wolfpack and jungle legend Eric Musselman down 9 to Texas at halftime. They fell even further behind in the second half when they were down 14. Things were not looking good. But they dug deep, they caught fire, they came all the way back to tie it, and then they sent it into overtime. Then they fell behind by 4 in overtime, and then they dug even deeper, and they came out with an 87-83 win and the program's first tournament victory in more than a decade. Had to feel pretty good, right? Actually, it felt bleeping good.
Eighth game of the season.
Good. What a game, man. Down the whole game. We didn't play good. We didn't play good. You guys just kept hanging around.
All right, so not everybody loved that. Hey, Alvy, re-rack that. It's not like he was F-bombing somebody. He was F-bombing it. My man was hyped. He was feeling it. He loves his players. I'm okay with that reaction in that moment.
Eighth game of the season.
Good. What a game, man. Down the whole game. We didn't play good. We didn't play good. You guys just kept hanging around.
Are you going to tell me that if you're a player, if you're a high school player, and you see that guy and that reaction, that you don't want to play for him? That you wouldn't go to battle for him? I mean, I love that.
What a game, man.
I'm not sure who was the bigger star on his team. Cody Martin, Caleb Martin, or Mariah Musselman? Because Eric's daughter is already a legend. Check out this interview that she did with Pops.
So what's harder, waking me up or going in a game in overtime?
Probably waking you up is a little bit harder than trying to win a game in overtime in the NCAA tournament.
Well, probably because I'm very lazy.
Probably because I'm very lazy. I mean, she ripped the tournament already. It belongs to her. And there was more to that interview. But then the thing about the tournament that's so amazing, when you exert what they had to exert to get through the first round, you want to make sure that you recover quickly enough to get ready for the next game. And you're not just happy to be there. That win over Texas earned them a matchup with the 2 seed, Cincinnati. And it got off to a brutal, brutal start. Bearcats were up 10-0 before Nevada even made their first basket. Cincinnati, and watching that game seemed to me, they're just too big, they're too quick, they were hitting everything, and when they missed, they were killing the Wolfpack on the glass. It looked like Nevada wasn't even going to make it to halftime of that game. But then you can throw in all your cliches about Cinderella's slipper not fitting and the carriage breaking down because the wheels were coming off that carriage in a big way. Then they were down 22 with 11 minutes to go. And to that point, nearly time to empty the bench. You know, empty the bench, thank the seniors, call it a night. But that's not what they did. as deep as they dug on Friday night, their shovels and their pickaxes were even stronger on Sunday. Their will was outstanding. They start to chip away, and that 22-point lead got smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, I've known Muss, as I mentioned, for decades. We literally go back 30 years. This guy's a warrior, he's a grinder, and the heart and the passion that he has as a head coach was there in his players last night. I'm not sure I've ever seen a team take on the characteristics of its coach more than the Wolfpack did last night. And then with 57 seconds left, Caleb Martin drains a three to tie it at 73. It's amazing. Even more amazing, with 10 seconds left, this happened.
Driving, a step back, 18-footer, short off the rim. Offensive rebound, Josh Hall. 10 seconds to go. Lofts with the right hand. It's gone. Good for Hall. 9.1 to go. Timeout, Cincinnati.
Thanks to Westwood One. So not only do they come all the way back to tie it, they take the lead. For the first time in the game, they've got a lead with over 9 seconds left. Then they close that thing out 75-73 to cap off the second greatest comeback in NCAA tournament history. Down 22 and coming all the way back to win against a 2-seed and a damn good 2-seed and the 6th best team in the country. If you saw Eric Musselman's reaction after they beat Texas, there was no way he was going to do at least that or more in coming back from 22 down, and he did not disappoint.
How did you pull this off, not once, but twice in an NCAA tournament?
Just a lot of heart, a lot of determination, no quit, some halftime adjustments, some strapping, and trying to speed them up. Nothing feels better than this. Nothing. 2016.
What an amazing reaction. And this is a guy who has been an NBA head coach twice. This is a guy that has spent his entire life in the game. I've never seen him so hyped. I've never seen him so pumped. And even he said after that game, this is the happiest I have ever been in my life. Tell me the last time, Alvy, tell me the last time you heard a coach react to a win, a college basketball game, a game that got you to the Sweet 16, had this kind of reaction.
Twice in an NCAA tournament.
Just a lot of heart, a lot of determination, no quit. Some halftime adjustments, some strapping, and trying to speed them up. Nothing feels better than this. Nothing. Sweet 16.
Meanwhile, he's got his sons with him. He's got his daughter with him. It was an amazing moment. And then, in true Muss fashion and tradition, he rips off his shirt and goes shirtless into the locker room. Hell yes. An amazing comeback, an amazing post-game interview, an amazing ride, and it continues. The Nevada Wolfpack on to the Sweet 16. And Muss and the Wolfpack are definitely living their best life ever. And what a matchup that is. We've already heard from Porter Moser. Eric Musselman joins me in about 10 minutes. They get after it in the Sweet 16. Wolfpack fan, reaction! How awesome is it to see what your team is doing right now? Dear Jim, here is how I envision your interview with Coach Musselman. Rome. We are joined by Nevada head coach Eric Musselman. Coach Musselman, hey Jim, you know what I do to get hyped? I take my shirt off. I take it off. I can't hear you, XR4TI.
I take it off. I feel out. Sweet 16. I can't hear you, know that.
Geoff and Lincoln, nicely done. Hey, Alvin, let me hear that again, back to back, side by side.
Hey, I like to get hyped for games. Right, get hyped. I take my shirt off.
Nothing feels better than this.
I take it off. I feel out.
Sweet 16.
I can't hear you, know that.
Oh, dude, that's good. Alvy, that's good. That's really good. Tip of the hat to Geoff and Lincoln. Hey, Geoff, because of that, I will refer to you as your given name, Jeff. Jeff and Lincoln. One more time, Alvy.
Hey, side by side. Four games. Raggy hot. I take my shirt off.
Nothing feels better than this. Sweet
16! I can't hear you, know that.
Jeff and Lincoln making the show better. Clones, do you have a second so I can rap with you about Fan Exchange? Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience March Madness courtside rather than on your couch. If so, you want to bust on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed, no getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Whether it's March Madness, MLB Opening Day, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, FanExchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the very best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. That's promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. FanExchange, we have tickets. FanExchange, promo code ROME. That's FanExchange. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Eric Musselman is my guest. Musk, good morning. What's up, Eric? How you feeling?
Jim, I'm doing great. It's awesome to come back in the jungle with you.
Musk, I got to tell you, I mean, I've known you a long, long time, and I know you've never had a week quite like that last one. A few hours have passed since that amazing comeback. Has it sunk in yet? And better yet, Musk, did the comeback on Texas even sink in?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing, Jim. We were down 14 to Texas, and we're playing with only 7 scholarship players, and our starting point guard Lindsey Drew, whose dad is now coaching the Cavs, he blew his Achilles out, and we moved our power forward Cody Martin to the point guard position. But we're really small; we're like 6'6" across the board at all 5 positions. And so when we played Texas, we were really, really worried about Mo Bamba inside because of his length and size. And you know, we made an adjustment at halftime. I just told the guys, just dribble drive into him. I don't care if he blocks 100 shots. Dribble drive into his body, and we wanted to try to get him in foul trouble, and he eventually fouled out. That changed the complexion of the Texas game. And then, I mean, I don't even know where to begin, Jim, on last night's game because we're down 22. It's the second biggest comeback in the history of the NCAA tournament and actually the biggest comeback in the second half. And I think we were down 22 with 10:58. Left in the game, and we started trapping and pressing, and I don't know what happened, but it happened, and we ended up with a 2-point win.
Eric Musselman joining us. I know, Mus, you told your guys also, you got to speed these guys up. We got to speed them up, and you're trapping, and you're pressing. But when you're down 22 with around 11 minutes to go, exactly what was your message to your guys? What did you tell them?
Well, in the huddle, Jim, what we kept talking about, it's the same thing last year. We were down in Albuquerque by 26, and it was the largest comeback in the history of college basketball when we played New Mexico. And we just told our team the same thing, which was every timeout, you know, every 4-minute media timeout, we had to chip away. So we told them when we were down 22, we said, hey, let's try and see if we can get this thing to 16. And then the timeout after that, we wanted to get it to 12. And then the timeout after that, we wanted to get the thing in single digits. And then once we got it in the single digits, we kind of mixed up whether we were going to trap or not. And some possessions we did. Other possessions we played straight up. We had the ball then with the tie game, which is incredible. And we had the hands in Cody Martin, the ball in his hands, and he took a pull-up jump shot, and we got an offensive rebound against, you know, Cincinnati's probably the best defensive rebounding team in the country. They're second in almost every defensive category, but we put 40-plus points on them in the second half. And, you know, for whatever reason, we got that game and the pace played like we wanted it to be.
Nevada head coach Eric Musselman joining us, talking about the two comebacks. Eric, you mentioned the Martins. When you look at Cody and when you look at Caleb, they grew up in a trailer park. Their mother worked multiple jobs. They were working at Walmart in high school. They're incredibly talented, but how much do they embody that chip on the shoulder mentality and that grit and that toughness that you want in your program?
I mean, they're such competitors, and they hate to lose. Their will to win is incredible, Jim. And I mean, it's kind of funny because like a lot of teams have tried zoning us. And when we're going against the zone, it's almost inevitable every time out. Caleb comes in and he's yelling at me about our zone offense, and then Cody listens to him for about 20 seconds, and then he tells him, "Hey, would you shut up and listen to Coach?" And it goes on
great.
Almost every single timeout. But those two guys push each other. If one of them comes in at night to get shots up, then the other one's got to come. And And what they've done is they've elevated the competitive nature of all of us, me included. They've elevated the coaching staff's will to win, and they've certainly elevated all their teammates' will to win. And we have a lot of guys like that that just hate to lose. And, you know, that's one of the things in our recruiting. I mean, we've had some really talented guys on campus. And once we've got to meet with them over meals and kind of get into their fabric of who they are, they just didn't fit with what Nevada was trying to do. But the guys that we have now, I mean, almost to a man, they hate losing. And that overcomes deficiencies, whether a guy's a little bit shorter or somebody might not be as good a rebounder or as good as defender or have the prettiest jump shot. But if you have great will to win, it's certainly a talent that we put a high value in.
Nevada head coach Eric Musselman joining us. He's on the Sweet 16. You know, Eric, then you had that trip back to the locker room where you ripped off your shirt, you celebrated with your guys. Look, when you grind as hard as you and your players have since the start of the season, what's it feel like in that moment? Can you even find the words to describe what it's like to go back in that locker room, rip your shirt off, and celebrate in that moment?
I mean, for me personally, I mean, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. The guys know it. Our team, you know, we all thrive on emotions, just like the quick story I told you about Caleb coming into the timeouts and going at me about how he wants to make adjustments on zone offense. That's who we are. Like, we're a competitive group of guys. And I think you summed it up best. We do grind really hard. We do have very detailed film sessions with our guys, and we tell guys exactly how we want their footwork to be on offense and exactly where we want screens. And so I think with over-discipline, when you do have a discipline system, so to speak, you got to celebrate when you win. And our guys know how to celebrate in the locker room. And I mean, the bottom line is, Jim, I got a really beautiful wife, and so I got to stay in shape. She's younger than me. I understand how beautiful she is, so I don't mind taking my shirt off and celebrating behind closed doors with my team.
My man, Eric Musselman joining us. Dude, you earned it. You mentioned your wife and the family. Eric, I mean, I thought that post-game interview was beautiful. Honestly, your boys were there. Your daughter Mariah, who is actually stealing the entire tournament, was there as well. What's it mean to you? You know, and you and I are the exact same age. We've known each other a long, long time. Everything changes, man. We evolve, we grow, we mature. Going through what you've gone through, that entire journey, what's it mean to you to celebrate that thing with your family the way you did?
I can't put it into words. And you're right, Jim. Like, as you do get older, you learn to appreciate stuff. And, like, I don't really care what anybody thinks about me celebrating and enjoying it with my family, because I've had a career that's taken me everywhere, from Venezuela to the Dominican Republic to college assistant coach. And so my family's been through a lot. And obviously my two sons, I went through a divorce, and I will take to my grave the guilt of not being with my two sons on a daily basis, like not being able to drive your son to school because you're working in another state is really, really hard, and time flies. And so to have my two sons there and my daughter, and for us to be able to celebrate, and then those guys got to get on their planes, and one's going back to USD in San Diego, and the other's going back to high school today in the Bay Area. And then we get to rejoin each other in Atlanta on Wednesday, and I can't wait to have my sons back, and I can't wait for my wife and daughter to come back. And you're right about Mariah, Jim. I don't even know what to do. Like, when I first heard that I was going to come back on with you, I was more worried. Am I going on or is Mariah going on? Because that's how the media requests have gone over the last 24 hours.
All right, so and Mariah, she is so comfortable in front of the camera or with a microphone where she's interviewing her old man. What does she make of this whole thing, Eric?
Well, she actually thinks that the NCAA tournament revolves around her. So we're getting ready for the game, and I was trying to put my tie on, and she told me to get out of the mirror, that she needed it, that how my tie looked was unimportant because she was getting interviewed during the course of the game. So she loves this. It's really cool to see her and her mom act like they're interviewing people, and this has been going on since she was a baby. So she, you know, she thinks she's on center stage, and it's really cool because most second graders are petrified if a camera's in front of it, and she thrives on it.
Not this one. Eric Musselman joining us for a few more moments. You know, Eric, I'm going to argue that the drive and the passion have always been there for you, but from where I'm sitting, it seems like you have kind of reinvented yourself along the way, even on the fly. So how different are you as a coach right now compared to maybe when you were an NBA head coach?
I think I'm much different. You know, I in my career, really, Jim, I did reinvent myself. I mean, I was, you know, out of the NBA and had to make a decision with, you know, what did I want to do with my career? And for 3 years, I just wanted to hang out and be a dad. And then from there, I wanted to try to figure out what I wanted to do. The D-League, we had two really good years. And just like the players want to get called up, I never got called back up after two great years in the D-League. And so I did this college thing, and my family was behind it. But I'm a much different coach from a leadership standpoint. Our guys, like, we're so loose, and we play loose. Like, we take a lot of threes, we play really fast, and I mean, they were just in there. We were in a breakfast room just now, and two guys walked in, and they were imitating me at halftime, and so we have fun. And I'm at a stage in my career where, you know, these guys, I hope in 20 years we're still talking, and I have a relationship that if they need me to call for them to get a job interview or something, I hope that we have a relationship that it's like a partnership and a lifelong relationship that I keep with all of my players.
You know, Eric, it's pretty clear what family means to you, the way you laid that out. And it makes me think about your father, Bill. Remember Bill? I mean, you're a coach's son through and through. But remember when your dad was sick and he came in the jungle and he did an interview and he did an amazing interview? I wonder, I mean, you might argue he knows exactly what's going on. He's looking down. But if your father, Bill Musselman, were here right now, what would he make of this team and this run?
Well, first of all, I mean, I know he's watching everything. I can hear his voice even during timeouts and half times before I go in and talk to the team. And I always tell our staff, like, hey, my dad would have said this right now. Or, hey, if you would have given a scouting report like that, he would have fired you. And so I'm constantly referring to him. But he's probably so happy about the winning, but he's probably wondering, why are you playing fast? Why are you shooting threes? Because, you know, my dad's style was very slow, very deliberate, milk the shot clock, play overly physical defense. We're not a really good defensive team. We're a really good offensive team. And so I'm sure my dad's wondering, where in the heck did this style come from? And it really came from when you work with people, and I was his assistant coach. I felt like we didn't get enough easy transition baskets, so I said, whenever I'm a head coach, I want to keep some of the things that he does, like the toughness and trying to get players that have great will to win, but I also want to play at a faster tempo. And I think that's what leadership's all about, is trying to figure stuff that you really like from people you worked with and then things that you might want to alter or change if you get your own shot at something.
We're talking Nevada basketball on the national stage right now. Eric, one last thought. I want to make sure you get some credit and some run for being a player. I want to go back to your journey. When you were a junior in high school and you were playing against Brecksville High and their fans were throwing hot dogs at you, all the years you and I have known each other, we've never talked about this. Fans at Wadsworth High School were throwing hot dogs at you as well. What were you like as a high school player, and what did you make of fans throwing hot dogs at you? What was that all about?
Well, so I was I could score the ball in high school, and I probably brought a lot of it on myself. I wore sweatbands, and when you shoot a lot, and your dad's the coach of the Cavaliers, and at that time, the Cavs were horrendous, Jim. And so I was an easy target. It was really, really hard on my mom, though. I remember, you know, leaving Wadsworth, leaving North Royalton, getting back into the car, and my mom would just be in tears, you know, and my dad would act like he didn't even hear her, and he would be going through the game and what I needed to improve on. But it kind of made me who I am. I mean, I think, you know, I've always had a chip on my shoulder, and you know, you can't worry about what the outside world is talking. Like, for us, it's really about what our team thinks and what my administration thinks and our fan base, and you really can't worry about people outside of that circle. And I think at a really, really young age, as a high school junior, I learned that you can't control negativity, and you can only control what you can control.
You know, Musa, I talk about this all the time, that I don't have a favorite team. I don't have a favorite athlete. You know, they pay me to be objective. They pay me to be impartial. I don't play favorites. I'm team content. All I care about is something to talk about every single day. But I got to be straight. I mean, you and I really do. We didn't grow up together, but we came up together is the point that I made. We were both in our early 20s when I put you on my first radio program back in Santa Barbara when you were a 23-year-old GM and coach of the Rapid City Throwers. I mean, again, we didn't grow up together, but we really came up together. So I can't lie to you. I was really impressed, really proud of you. And I know what you put into this. I know the grind. I know how tough it's been. So congratulations. Great to have you back in the jungle. And Thursday is going to be a big one for sure.
No, it's going to be huge, and we can't wait. Kind of two underdog Cinderella stories. And I can't thank you enough for having me on, Jim, because every time I come on with you, my phone blows up. So thanks for having me on. Thanks for a little Wolfpack pub, and we'd love to come on anytime, and I appreciate the friendship.
We start right here with the Retrievers of UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Now, be honest, you had never heard of UMBC before Friday night. But you have now, because they did what nobody had ever done before. They made NCAA history. So once again, let's get something out of the way. Yes, they lost last night, and their tournament is over. And no, I don't give a damn. Could not care less. The crazy thing isn't that they lost to Kansas State. The crazy thing is that they had that game. They could have won that game. The crazy thing is that little 16 seed that could, UMBC, is pissed that they're not going to the Sweet 16. And why is that? Because of what happened on Friday night. Once again, I've been saying this for a long time, that a 16 would eventually get a 1. It was bound to happen. It was only a matter of time. Eventually, it had to happen. But if it had happened, I thought it would have been a 16 hitting a last-second shot to close it out. And in the first half, it looked like that might be the way it was going to go. UMBC was hanging with Virginia, and it was tied at halftime. Now, we know this also. There have been 16s in the past who have been close with a number one for 20 minutes, maybe more, but they would get cold from the field, and then they would remember that they were the 16 seed and implode down the stretch. In other words, it was only a matter of time before UMBC remembered that it was UMBC. Except that's not what happened on Friday. This was definitely not that, because in the second half, they didn't fade. They stepped up, and then they stomped on Virginia's head. They went from being tied at 21 at halftime to scoring the first 6 points out of the locker room, and then they stretched that into a double-digit lead, and then they absolutely poured it on. This was UMBC taking it to the number one seed, Virginia. And not just the number one seed in the South region, the number one seed in the entire freaking tournament. And they weren't even remotely surprised. Jarius Lyles went off for 28. Point guard KJ Mora going absolutely legend on both ends of the floor, and Virginia having absolutely no answers whatsoever. Cavaliers are not only one of the best defensive teams in the country. No, check that. They are the best defensive team in the country, and they're one of the best defenses I have ever seen, yet they were getting locked up by the Retrievers. Oh, and for the record, they are the Chesapeake Bay Retrievers, not Golden Retrievers, so get your facts straight. This is a team that not only shocked a one seed, not only shocked the number one overall seed, it's a team that lost to Albany by 44 in January. Yet that same team beat the ACC champs by 20 in March. So when people ask you why the NCAA tournament is the best event in all of sports, just point to that. And you can also point to Virginia head coach Tony Bennett and the amazing class that he showed after the worst defeat of his career. Really, one of the worst defeats of anybody's career.
We talk about it all the time. With the adulation, the praise, it comes. And we've got a lot of that this year. And then on the other side, there'll be blame and people pointing that out. But that can't, in the end, you know, define these guys and our team or us. If you play this game and you step into the arena, this stuff can happen. And those who haven't been in the arena or in the competition, maybe they don't understand that.
Hey, look, you'll never find a better young coach than that guy. You'll never find a classier coach than that guy. I mean, that's the kind of thing that no coach wants to go through, and he could not have handled that any better. That was an absolute masterclass in class. And on top of all that, I'm not sure who was more dominant Friday night. The UMBC Retrievers on the court or at UMBC Athletics on Twitter. Because Zach Seidel, who runs that handle, was just as fierce as Lyles and company. When he wasn't giving scoring updates or checking on the status of cookies in the media room, he was torching my man Seth Davis for declaring that the game was over as soon as it began. Or punking this dude who tweeted, apparently at UMBC Athletics, calls themselves hashtag Retriever Nation. And they have 5,588 followers. UMBC Athletics' response was, quote, "The dictionary defines a large aggregate of people united by common descent, history, culture, or language inhabiting a particular country or territory. 5K is a large amount, dude." 5K is a large amount. Or 5K was a large amount because that 5K is now 110K. And counting. That's a really, really large amount, dude. And then there was this clown who tweeted, quote, "At UVA Men's Hoops, what's going on? They having trouble with at UMBC Athletics basketball." To which UMBC Athletics responded, quote, "We won 24 games and a conference title. It's not like we are a YMCA team, dude." Threw that one down on that dude's head with authority. And then capped off the game with, quote, "Put some respect on it. We have defeated number one overall seed Virginia 74-54. I'm telling you, that's how you win a game, and that's how you win the internet. And while they lost last night, and losing always sucks, they did something that nobody is ever going to forget. I mean, the cheesiest thing ever would be to say, they didn't win that game, but they won America's hearts. But the fact is, it's true. And here's another truth. Years from now, people are not going to remember who went to the Sweet 16 or even the Elite Eight. They might not even remember who wins the national championship, but everybody's going to remember UMBC and what they did. Legends. Legends, and I could not wait to put some respect on that. John Calipari is my guest. John, how is life for you right about now?
Jim Rome, how the horses doing, Jim Rome?
Cal, not as good as your horses. You know, they're okay. They're okay, Cal. How about you? How's your team doing right now?
You know what? This has been, and I said this before this last mini run, this has been a rewarding year, maybe one of my most rewarding, because I had a team of young kids that went from the look of terror, the look of fear, anxiety, to a look of joy. And when you lead young people, and look, leading them is not leading them to do what they want to do their best. It's leading them to do something really that they don't want to do and don't know it's in their best interest. That's what I think leading is, at least in college basketball with young teams. But, you know, here's a funny thing. You and I haven't spoken in a while, so we'll have no poop in the ice cream stores. I do have another one that I may give to you, but they're talking about our little corner of the world where they put us in a meat grinder, but everybody got beat. So now all of a sudden, I'm worried about them wanting to reseed the field, and we haven't made plans to go to Atlanta because I'm afraid they may send us to L.A.
That's great.
And so, like Loyola, everybody, well, look, they beat Miami and Tennessee. Tennessee beat our brains in. Nevada comes from 22 down to Cincinnati and Texas 14 down, and they're still playing. And then Kansas State, without their leading scorer, ends up beating Creighton, who's one of those teams that can score. And so I'm looking at it saying, I try to tell my guys, hey, don't listen to all these talking heads. They've never coached. They've never played in this thing. We have a challenge ahead of us. Thursday, forget about anything else. Our game against Kansas State is going to be the hardest game. And since our tournament, our own tournament.
John Calipari joining us. You know, Cal, you just did two things. You went right to two places that I wanted to ask you about. I was going to ask you first, what makes this season so rewarding? Because I know you've said that this might be the most rewarding season you've had. But, Cal, just finish that thought. I mean, what do you make of that first weekend? A weekend where a 16 beats a 1, a weekend where two 11 seeds move on to the Sweet 16. What do you make of that whole thing? Exactly what's going on here?
Well, there's parity in you know, in this tournament, where everybody now starts at 0-0, and you got good players up and down the line here. You have 16s now. You know, it's kind of like the 4-minute mile. One just had to do it so that they believed they could do it. And that's what has just happened. So now you're going to see other 16s get, they're going to beat some ones, just because it's been done. But I look along, some of it, you could say 11 seed, 10 seed. I'm looking at teams. And you and I know, I've said this before, when a team gets misseeded, you don't hurt them and you don't punish them and you don't make it like we stuck him. The teams he plays, that team plays, get screwed. Because they shouldn't be playing at that team that good. I say it about Davidson, our opening game. Raise your hand, any coach in the country that liked to open up with playing Davidson after you won the SEC tournament. No one. I mean, there's no way they were 12. We got lucky. They missed some shots that they normally make. But, yeah, this, for me, again, I've done this a long time. And you would think, well, the greatest reward is the win over. No. It's seeing a player that was down in that rabbit hole. He was so bad, he couldn't see straight. He had terror, he had anxiety, he couldn't sleep. His life flashed before him, and he slowly got out of that hole and started to play and had a breakthrough. When Hami walked in our locker room after the last game, the team put him up on his on their shoulders. They were so happy for him. Same thing happened for Kevin Knox, who was struggling. And he goes to West Virginia and goes for 30. The team went crazy for him. This is a process. You cannot skip steps. And I told these kids when we were struggling, my will is stronger than yours. So you can keep fighting me, but you're not winning. Now, I got tired, Jim. Romy, I was exhausted. I wasn't frustrated because I couldn't let them know they were starting to beat me down a little bit. But eventually they come around because they want to do well, because they're good kids, because they come from good families. But they're going to try to do it their way because it's easier.
Right.
Give me the ball and let me shoot more and you'll see. How about guarding somebody and getting a rebound? Well, if you let me shoot more, it won't show so bad. Really? Obviously, we can't win that way. The people around them, I'll give you a good one. It's kind of like sometimes the people around them only look at them and nothing else. So it's a 100-man marching band, and they're marching in unison. It's unbelievable. Arms, feet, every instrument. It's crazy. And then 99 turn right, and their child turns left. And they look and say, what's wrong with those 99? Sometimes that's what these kids are hearing and being enabled. I've been blessed. Blessed with families who have trusted me with their children.
So, Cal, is that the 2018 version of pooping the ice cream? Because you and I
yes,
are always going to look forward and not
yes,
look
it
back.
Is. It is. Well, next time I talk, we'll give the poop and the ice cream. But I don't have any poop and the ice cream guys. That's only when I have one of those guys.
All right. Now, were there any of those guys, I mean, even like as you point out, you were going to outlast them. You were going to outwill them. But there were moments. I mean, you go back, Cal, to Valentine's Day. You had just lost to Auburn by 10. It was your fourth straight loss. It dropped you below 500 in the SEC. Following that loss, there was all that noise outside the program that maybe this team wasn't that good. Maybe this team is an NIT team. You've done this a long time. You know the process. What did you think about this team at that time?
Well, first of all, we were getting better. Second of all, there were four NCAA tournament teams we were playing, and I believe three of them were on the road. And so we had Tennessee beat, should have beat them at home. We had the ball up two or four or whatever it was. We had Auburn beat. We should have beat them on the road. I knew we were getting better, but I will say this. We had to win a game, and I didn't look on the horizon, and I saw Alabama coming, Missouri, who already beat us, at Arkansas. I mean, I looked down the road and said, my gosh, we could lose – 12 in a row. And I said, push that out of your mind. It ain't happening. And all I kept telling the kids was, you know what? Put yourself in a position to win, we'll be fine. As soon as you win a game, you'll see this. And I keep telling them, I've done this 30 years now. 30 years. I've seen everything. Losing streaks, winning streaks, taking people for granted, noon games where one team doesn't show up, a 9:30 game where the team one team's exhausted by halftime, can't think. You've seen all of it. I stick with guys like Hami. They were saying he shouldn't be starting. Why are you playing him? Because he deserves an opportunity. He's working hard. Now, if a kid doesn't work, that's not on me. Right now, Nick Richards. We have to have Nick Richards play better. And you know what? I'm still starting him. Is he better than some of the other guys who are playing? No. Right now, they're playing better than him. But I'm starting him to give him his opportunity. Get out there and bust through this. I can't do it for him. I can't think for him. I can't perform for him. But I can give him an opportunity and love him and hug him and tell him we're all here for you. But you got to do it.
Hey, John,
you have to evaluate yourself. Try to do something to change. Work harder. Spend more time. We have our point guard. Everybody's talking about Shea Alexander. No one knew who he was from Canada. He came here. No one knew him. I didn't start him early in the year. 7 o'clock in the morning, he's in the gym shooting. Comes up, watches tape. Show me my turnover. Show me the passes I'm making that you like. I ask the weight room, who's the best in the weight room? Shea Alexander, not close. Never misses a class. Never late for a tutor, and works his ass off, and excuse me, his butt off in every practice. Well, what do you think's going to happen? He's going to play bad? So then you tell guys, why don't you follow him? I'm tired. It's really, all right. There are choices you make. And now all of a sudden guys are starting to follow him because they're thinking maybe that's how I break through. It is how you break through. There's no magic wand.
Work your ass off. Get in the gym. Break tape. Ask me how I can get better. We're talking about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, Cal, I mentioned at the very top, the program is being featured in a Facebook docuseries, Inside the Madness, University of Kentucky Basketball. Episode 7 drops on Wednesday. I know you get approached all the time for all-access series. What is it about this one that appealed to you? What is your why for doing this?
You know, I figured you'd ask me that. But let me say this first. The reason all the people out there, because many of them want to see us lose. You wouldn't believe that. Watch this, because this is when we lose those four games. I think it's two or three of the losses when we were losing. It shows them in these next couple segments. So there's only 10 segments. I guess the seventh one is dropping. But these guys bothered me for at least 6 months. And I kept saying no, but when I watched this team and no one knew them, and I knew what great kids they were and how good they were as people and how, you know, they're good students, they're good, all the stuff that you want, I said, would you guys want to do this? Because you could start having people know who you are. It's kind of like branding yourself. If you got, it's not a thing of following me around. And I told them, you don't need to follow me around. Now, they had me taped everything, and I acted like they were a fly on the wall. I haven't watched them. I will this summer because it's all, I got to keep looking ahead right now, but I'll watch them this summer. But everybody tells me you get a feel for the team. You get a feel for what they go through. You get a feel with how I'm trying to drag them. You get a feel when we lost, and it's on Facebook. So, you know, I would say it's a good time to watch them if you really don't like me or the program, because we lose four in a row. And you can just get the popcorn, put your toes up, tell your wife, let's watch this together. And she says to you, we never watch anything together. Yeah, but we're going to enjoy this.
In Cincinnati, Clint, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, let me echo your buddy there. Nothing feels worse than this. Nothing! So you got UC and Xavier both blowing huge leads last night after Mick Cronin out of nowhere trashes the Kentucky Wildcats, stirring up all kinds of cosmic justice. The Cincinnati Reds are as meaningless as they've ever been. The Cincinnati Bengals are as meaningless as they've ever been, which they've always been meaningless. No city in all of America has it worse than Cincinnati. We have no titles of any kind since 1990. It is so bad in this city that we had to claim the Cleveland Cavs victory in six as one of our own. We had to go to Cleveland to get a win. That's how bad it is. That city is 5 hours away and just as bad as Cincinnati. And we're dying for a Major League Soccer franchise in this city. That's how bad it is here as well. I don't know what to do, man. We need a life raft.
You got to rack that guy, Clint. Nicely done. I'm sorry about all that. But you know what it is? You know what that is, Clint? It's, quote, cosmic justice. That's what that is. Let's go to Boston. Mark in Boston. Mark, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Rome. Oh, I'm sorry, man. This is actually Mark. I usually reserve my Dan and Denver voice for Podcast Tuesdays for maximum brown nosing. Jim, I'm calling today because I had the honor and privilege of meeting Cruz Pedregon and Caleb Cox over the weekend at the NHRA Gator Nationals. And let me tell you something, dude. It is not an act. Cruz is a straight-up certified clone. My father, massive NHRA fan, has been talking about going for years, and we wouldn't have been able to meet Cruz and see the car up close if it wasn't for, like, this weird jungle community, man. So props for that. But all Cruz wanted to talk about was the jungle, the smack off, all of it. It was wild. And not to mention, for a dude that has the scrote to strap himself into a 350-mile-per-hour rocket, he was the most humble dude I've ever met. So, Rome, you need to get out of the races. All clones should. It's not something that should be experienced on TV. Because I have to tell you, man, seeing those funny cars up close and those top fuel dragsters, sound of those cars is enough to make your butthole pucker up, man. And I would be remiss if I didn't spend a little bit of time shouting out my Wolverines for bombing their way into the Sweet 16. Fourth time since 2013, Beeline and the boys are in. And yeah, I heard Calvin Sampson on your show last week. You almost had him, Jim. You almost took out Beeline with the karma. But that's what Michigan men do. They persevere. A plane crash couldn't stop Beeline last year. The jungle karma couldn't so far. The dude may look like Mr. Rogers, but he is cold-blooded. But seriously, like, if you could have him on this week, that would be great. I need this. Do this for me, Rome. Seriously. Go blue.
Rack him. Nice job, Mark. Great call. Mark in Boston. So he met Cruz Pedregon. I mean, absolutely. Cruz is what you see is what you get. That is Cruz. And not only is he a world champion, but he is a world champion clone. He loves the show. Loves the show. And so, Mark, I'm glad you got close to it. And you were able to get close to it because of, as you point out, this weird jungle community we have. There it is. Big Monday, and we are just getting started. I'll be right back here tomorrow. Check you then. I'm out.